What's up, guys? This is Uriah Faber, the California Kid, here with Greg Conley, serial entrepreneur, founder of Trifecta Nutrition. We're talking about everything under the sun, fitness, entertainment, and of course, business, making that money.
Here we are, the Cali Cast. My boy Greg here.
What's up, guys?
And another episode. Of course, as we know, I'm trying to keep this as a loose structure, but we're talking about business, sports, life and stories, etc., and health and fitness. And we're going to have an awesome guest here pretty soon. A guy that knows about being the best. He's also kind of an imposing dude. Not the most dangerous, I don't think, but definitely looks the part.
He's bigger than us, definitely.
He's a lot bigger than us. That's Mr. Jay Cutler. Mr. Olympia, four-time Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, four-time Mr. Olympia.
Yeah. Businessman, knows about building a brand, knows about competition, the mental game, all that stuff plays into it. So I'm excited to pick his brain a little bit. I've had a chance to meet Jay on a couple different occasions. I know he's a big supporter of our team. Being an Ohio guy, mm-hmm. He knows Cody Garbrandt and Lance Palmer, a couple of my good buddies. And so looking forward to him coming into this room, filling up the room.
We left this much couch.
Yeah, we left that much couch, and we're probably going to have to scoot over a little bit more. So with me, just want to give a little update what's been going on with me. 2017 has been an amazing year. 2018 is upon us, and this team I've built is pretty impressive. So I'm pretty pumped on the things that were done in 2017. We're figuring out a new structure on the coaching side of things, which is super unique, in my opinion, to the MMA world. Basically, putting a bunch of different options out there for head coaches positions, assistant coaches of current UFC roster, which helps out with the team, and then a fighter buddy system. I think this is cool because it's unique and it's been filling up a bunch of problems that I've had or seen throughout the years as a guy who's gone from the wild, wild west of mixed martial arts into the current space of today. And it's a changing game, you know, just like the business side. And, you know, money's getting more intense. The notoriety's getting more intense. The talent's getting better. And so we're changing with the times. And, you know, it's been cool. Greg, I know we've been busy with Trifecta also.
Yep.
You're always hustling, always grinding. Secured some big opportunities, including, working with the UFC, right? How's that going?
We just left UFC corporate headquarters, you know, planning for 2018. Working with a lot of fighters, you know, largely thanks to intros coming from this guy. Trifecta, for those of you who aren't familiar, has grown to be a juggernaut now. We've got a top 30 grossing app on the App Store that has, you know, all kinds of workouts, track your food, all that type of stuff. And then we ship, you know, food all over the country. So excited to hang out with Jay. Big fan myself.
Yeah.
He's the big man himself. And He's been in the fitness industry for a long time and clearly knows what the fuck he's doing because he's one of the biggest dudes you will ever see.
It's kind of a trip to me to think about. I mean, obviously, business world, I've been in the fight world. Just, it's a grind to get to the top and everything. I mean, there's a top dog ballerina. There's a top dog janitor. I mean, there's somebody who's a leader in everything. And so we're going to get to talk to the guys, one of the guys who's not only a leader but a champion in a very competitive thing, and get kind of an insight on the discipline, the culture, what kind of business opportunities pop up from that, what it's like building the brand in that in space. And on top of that, I mean, the changing times. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in like Bitcoin era and like the millennials of, you know, the internet world and dealing with, you know, print being gone, magazines a thing of the past, and the internet era upon us. I want to see what that means for Jay. So sounds like somebody's here now.
Might be
our food. That might be Jay. Let's wait and see.
It is Jay.
Hey, there he is.
Good to meet you.
Andy.
Speak of the devil.
Greg.
What's up, my man?
What's up?
Just chilling, man. Thanks for coming by, my man.
Of course, man. Are you my aunt?
Hello.
She's friends with Danny, Cody's
yeah.
girl.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, this is awesome. RJ, Jason, our media.
What's up?
This guy wants to go fucking party with you.
The UFC fucking, yeah, it's like.
He's like, dude, I'm a big J fan. I'd love to go fuck a party with that guy. I'm like,
I don't really party much.
Yeah.
Well, I don't either. I mean, my wife's going to be up here in a few minutes and everything, but the UFC, they take, like, we're one of the title sponsors now. They take very good care of us, and they got...
I live here, dude, so it's like...
I know. Yeah, everybody we talk to in Vegas is like...
Dude, I listen to your thing, and you're like, man, Vegas just, like, takes the life out of me. And,
yeah.
Like, and I've lived here. Like, I moved here as, like, a challenge. Like, people are like, now you're going to Vegas, oh, your career is going to... And my career just had started to really take off. I was living in Orange County in California.
Yeah.
And I said, shoot, I'm going to go to Vegas. And everyone's like, oh, you're out of your mind. Like, you're going
to... I would have been one of those guys that says you're out of your mind, by the way, but yeah.
And it's like, I didn't get caught up, and I went out twice a year, like, for special, like, occasions. Like, New Year's and Memorial Day weekend were the only times I ever went out and did anything, and... The rest of the time I was training, because I was training for two contests a year at the time, the two biggest titles. And I was winning one or in placing second at the other until I finally beat Coleman, you know. But
yeah,
it's just crazy because Vegas is, it eats you up if you're not.
You got to
pace
discipline.
Yourself. When did you get here?
What did we get here? Yesterday morning?
Yes.
You ain't ready to tackle Vegas yet. You're the first night here.
Yeah. No,
you know?
Well, the problem is the director of sponsorships at the UFC just has the UFC card.
Yeah.
So he's like,
cash.
And he's like, everywhere we go, he's like, oh, I bought the bar. And we're like, fuck.
That's not a bad
What's
thing.
The fight's tomorrow, right?
The fight's tomorrow.
And who are the headliners for it? I know the girl's fighting, right?
Yeah we got Cyborg and Holly.
Is that the biggest... like names on the card as far as like is that the main event or
yeah
that's the main event
that's the main event and that's a pay-per-view too. I don't think many people are going to buy that pay-per-view, unfortunately. But then we've got my girl Cynthia Cavillo, who's a Team Alpha Male chick, Team Alpha Female, and she's fighting Carla Sparza. She's gonna whoop her, in my opinion. And then I've got another one of my guys, Rick Glenn, who's on the undercard.
Okay.
And then I'm not sure who else is on the card. There's
not any huge big draws.
No, not really.
No. Yeah.
No. So it'll be interesting.
I think Cyborg and Holly will be a fun fight. I mean, Cyborg's a monster, but
I met her a few times out here. She's
Cyborg's a fucking beast. Now. She's like, I mean,
who do you think's gonna win?
I just think because Holly, I mean, Misha Tate beat Holly, and she got beat by another girl. And Cyborg is just like, she's like on a different level, I think. Like, as a human being.
Is this the first time she's fought in the UFC in a minute?
No.
Cyborg?
There's like three girls in the UFC at the 145 pound division, and they've had the most title fights. This is the third title fight of the year. So it's like the least amount of people in the weight class, but they keep having these title fights.
Yeah.
So I think she fought twice. This is her second time. And it's been like everybody's wanted her to come in for years, but there's been no one to.
Well, I thought she was going to fight Rousey for a while, but that never happened. You know?
Rousey was like, hell
avoiding
man.
That shit.
Yeah.
I would avoid it myself,
Yeah, for sure. So that's great. So you actually moved here, what, you said 2000? Was it 2006?
I moved here in, let's see. I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up in a small town there, 6,000 people. I'm the youngest of seven kids, and no one lifted weights. My dad's currently 80. He'll be 89 next year.
What?
And my mom's 77.
They were older when they had you.
Well, my oldest brother, I'm 10 years apart from, like, the next sibling. My sister and I are, like, a year apart, but, like, my parents got separated, took a break, and then had us two kids, and then they got separated again.
Two sets.
So they had, like, five in a row, and then they broke off, and then they had us two, and then broke off again, so... Like, my oldest brother's almost 60, and I'm 44. I'm the youngest.
Dude, that's kind of crazy.
So, like, my brothers and sisters raised me, and we come from, like, a farming town, and, like, you're familiar because you're from Northern Cal. So we grew up, like, we were pig farmers.
Yeah.
And we had cattle and, like, chickens. My brother still raises, he has about 60 cows still. They have pigs. They got chickens. My dad still, he runs tractors every day.
That's crazy.
He's still
and
active.
And he's 80...
He'll be 89.
Dude, that's a good life, man.
Two or
three. Yeah, keep you young, honestly.
Yeah. Did I see you used to work Concrete also.
My brother's business is concrete. So they started that business when I was 11. So I actually started hauling concrete forms. And
that's a great base to get.
You know, so I was working like after school, weekends, school vacations. Like, so everyone else was going out and going away. Like, we come from a, like, we were in like a regional high school. So it was like five towns and there was some wealthy towns or whatever. So a lot of the, you know, kids that played sports, I really couldn't play sports until I got like further in high school because I was just in demand to do all the work, you know?
Yeah.
And I despised my brothers and my father for it, to be honest, because it seemed like every time I had free time, I was doing some sort of chores or I was doing the concrete work.
Yeah.
But it was like manual labor. I don't know if you know, but like it's different out here. We had concrete foundations, so we would set forms to make the basements. That's what we did, and we'd have to carry these 80-pound forms.
Oh, man.
And I was only 11, so I like developed a really rugged physique early. And you know, and I bet, and my brothers are like, "Oh, this is going to be your business someday. This is what my father wanted me to do." You know, my father would go out there when he retired from. He was a highway superintendent. He retired at 65. And he was lugging forms and still running the tractors and all that stuff. He collected John Deere's, you know, the old tractors. So I did that all through high school. I ended up playing football. I was a football player. And I mean, I made great money. I had more money than any kid in school. I had nice cars. And, you know, I was always going out for nice dinners. And I was kind of a playboy, you know. So
I find that hard to believe, Jay.
So
we got you growing hair, you know, so that's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, she knows all the stuff.
I'm sure.
There wasn't much to do. I mean, we partied. We had a lot of land, so I had big bonfires, and we'd party out there. And I mean, I was a partier in high school, and I didn't even toy with weights. I just was the strongest, ruggedest kid with just manual labor.
Working your ass off.
So, and I was tough. You know, I had a chip on my shoulder, and I fought, but not the kind of fighting you did. You know, I kind of took out my frustrations of everything, kind of like with anyone.
We think the frustration basically about just feel like you're always at. Basically working.
My dad was very rigid about, okay, you have to work. You know, he was just very demanding like that. My brothers worked their asses off, and they still do. They're still doing the concrete work. But, you know, I mean, that's why I was a high school kid that really didn't get to enjoy a lot of high school. And then, I picked up a magazine when I was like 12, and I saw pictures of these muscular guys. I said, shoot, I'd like to do that. And I was building a physique. So all my sisters who are older, all their friends would be like, "Man, your brother's so built. What's he, you know, does he lift weights?" And they're like, "No, look at this, how built he is." And he just, you know, does manual labor, and, you know, I had, you know, good structure. I mean, that's what bodybuilding's about.
Right.
Having like the wide shoulders. But
there's definitely,
you know,
some genetic aspect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, because you have to have the ability to have like legs that match the upper body.
Right.
You know how the whole thing. You've been around.
I don't think I got that. That.
And it's, you know, it's, and honestly, like, I'm 5'9". I mean, the height to weight, you know, that's. Like, the average of Mr. Olympia is like 5'9", 5'10", 5'11". Nothing over that. Like, Schwarzenegger was like the tallest at 6 feet or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a guy like Ferrigno, 6'5", he was too tall to be big enough. He had to be like 400 pounds in order to win the Olympia. That's why he never won. So I actually started weight training when I graduated high school. I actually joined the gym. I read these in August. It was like 1991. I joined the gym. And I started training at the local Lowe's gym, and I mean, from there, I just kind of blew up.
Just went for it, huh?
I just knew kind of what I wanted to do, and I started weight training. My body responded, and I was going to college at the time for criminal justice, be a police officer, because that's what I wanted to do at the time. I didn't want to do the concrete. I knew I didn't want to work with a shovel and a hammer the rest of my life.
Right.
And you know, I responded so well with the weights, and someone said, "Hey, you should do this show," and I didn't know what it was about. I had looked in the magazines, but I didn't really say, okay, I want to be a bodybuilder right away.
Right.
And I did well. I placed second in the first show I did at like after 6 months of training.
You probably won a little bit of money in the process.
Well, no, it wasn't money at that time because the amateur division doesn't pay money. Mm-hmm. Like, you get trophies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you're looking for is ultimately the sponsor. And of course, once I got recognized locally, I started getting calls from like this TV show out here. It was based in California, actually, called American Muscle Magazine. So it was like a featured thing on ESPN2. Mm-hmm. And people would watch that, and it would show like up and coming stars.
Yeah.
So this guy started calling me saying, "Hey, you have a lot of potential," because I had really big legs. I was like a 700-pound squatter at 19.
Oh my god!
I was just like a beast, you know. So
that's
so big. Like, I had these really big legs. I just didn't have the upper body, you know. So fortunately for me, like, that was the muscle was easy for me to put on. I just kept eating. I started working with a nutritionist, like, right away, that was like one of the best in our business. His wife was like second in the Olympia in the women's, and that's when it was, the women's side was popular. So I won, you know, I won that contest, was the first, I mean, I got second in the first contest. And then, I mean, my phone was ringing. This guy in California's like, man, you know, you can be great in this. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm sure he tells
it's everybody. A different time. How is somebody in California, I mean, they must, it's
all magazines. He would call the gyms. He would call around to the gyms, huh. And he would call me. Like, he got my phone number, and he'd ring my house phone, because remember, we had no cell phones.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't even think there were pagers then, you know? And there was no internet. So this guy would, like, call the gym, and he'd be like, is Jay training? And they'd be like, no, he usually comes at 8 at night, because I was training, like, 8. The gym closed at 10, because I would go to college. I would go to class all day, and then whatever.
So how did he see in the first place? This one show?
Yes. I mean, I had a local, there was another local guy, and he, like, there was local competitions, and there was guys that were a level above me that were amateurs.
Yeah.
So this one kid that trained in like a couple towns over, he was like pretty, he did pretty well on the competition scene, like the Mr. Massachusetts show. It's like the local show, which I actually promote it now. But he like said, hey, there's this big kid. He's a new kid from Worcester. You know, he's got these really big legs. You should check this kid out. He's a blonde kid, good looking kid. And, you know, back then it was marketing, because they were looking for poster guys, like the magazines and all that stuff.
Today it's the same way.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good faces, because there's a lot more reach with the internet. So, you know, you got social media.
You can
media
find
people.
Anyone everywhere.
Yeah, so you can come up, you know, go through your feeds or whatever. But back then, it was like word of mouth, like, this guy has potential to be a world beater, you know, bodybuilder. So this guy started ringing me. I just thought he was some weirdo.
Which he might have been.
Well, I think it was, he would call me and say, how do your pecs look, and how do your legs look? So it was
kind of, like, mind your own,
it was
fucking
kind of
business,
fucking
buddy.
Weird, you know what I mean? And he'd be like, how's your pecs? And, and I'm like, and I'm a kid, you know, I'm 18, and this, you're is like, some fucking creep on the phone. Like, so he'd be like, all right, you know, hey, we want to shoot you, you should do this. So he somehow conned
me. He's like, we want to shoot you.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, buddy, I'm sure you do.
He conned me into doing the Teen Nationals, which is the biggest teenage show in the country. That's okay. Like, you win that, you
look. Well, how old were you at this point?
19.
Oh, okay.
That's insane. He's like, hey, I want you to do this show. And I'm so inexperienced. Like, I barely know how the poses up there and the posing routines. And, you know, there's certain things that go through with the bodybuilding thing, transitional poses. And, like, you have the mandatory poses and you have the free posing, all that stuff. And I was, like, very, very shy. I wasn't good with crowds. So I did the Teen Nationals. He conned me into doing, he's like, hey, I'll reimburse you, just pay for the flight. So I think my mom flew down there with me, my sister, one of my sisters flew. We went to Raleigh, North Carolina, and I went down there and competed in the heavyweights and won that. You know, I was fresh. I only had done one other show.
What is the weight for a heavyweight?
It was 225 and up.
Okay.
And I was...
you were 19 already?
No, sorry. It was two... Back then, it was 198 and up was a heavyweight. And it wasn't a super heavy at the time. So, like, we have divisions, like, it goes, it's kind of like with you guys, but it's like lightweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and then heavyweight.
Yeah.
Now they added super heavy, which is over 225. Well, I was about 215, so I was, like, considered one of the big guys, like, the biggest division. And I won that class.
That's a big win, 19. Holy smokes.
I competed, and that's lean. You know, I was ripped at 215.
That's nuts.
You know, I'm 5'9". And I've dieted down from, like, 240. So I was pretty stacked at 19.
Yeah.
And then right after that, bro, to be honest, like, you know what's crazy is, like, I got recognition at that show. Everyone's like, this kid's unbelievable. His legs. I mean, you can Google search and see, like, Jay Cutler at 19.
We'll have to do that. So maybe flip it up.
And I had bleach blonde hair. I put all this sun into my hair. So I had, like, this, you know.
You were different.
Yeah, I was different. Yeah. I was a big white dude. And so I won my class. So I got a lot of recognition. You know, of course, the magazines covered it. So they were like, hey, this kid's a new talent. And I boomed my weight right up to, like, 260 after that show.
Oh, really?
Like, I, for some reason, the diet phase... Like, I dieted down, and I deprived myself of so many calories that when I rebounded back, I went up to, like, 260, but I was actually in good shape. It wasn't
your
fat.
Your body was like...
It just responded, you know, from being on, like... That was the first time I ever really dieted for a show. Because the first one I did, I just kind of dieted on, like, honestly, lasagna and pasta and stuff like that. I didn't know how to really eat until I hired a nutritionist, you know. He started working with me. And then I actually found a lucky break because... At the time, like, everyone talked about the mecca of bodybuilding. Like, Gold's Gym Venice. And that's you have to go out there to bake it.
Which is kind of dead now, right?
It is, because the magazines like Muscle Fitness and Flex, which were the only outlets at the time, were based in Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get publicity, you had to go to California, because the photographers aren't going to fly to Massachusetts.
About proximity. It was
But they're all in, are they in Manhattan now?
The body was are scattered about.
What can like, be all over now because of the way the world works.
Like, now the magazines don't matter because, you know, you have your own video people and everything else. But, you know, like, you have this California kid. Like, you are looked upon as a different, I know he's a year cat, but, like, we on the East Coast were, like, always, like, we idolize the guys because of, like, man, those guys get to train in the sun and it's warm.
The beach.
They drive the cars. They don't get salt and shit on them all the time. And, like, they're driving nice convertibles. And so I was our dream was to always go to California. Yeah. I mean, honestly, my goal.
And that was Schwarzenegger kind of put that place on the map.
Yeah.
Right? He, like, started the whole
original Gold's Gym. And honestly, like, I went to school to be a cop because I wanted to be a motorcycle cop and be like Chips. That's what influenced me. Like, I wanted to move to California and be
a
motorcycle cop.
I barely
cop.
Remember that being I can't remember any episodes except for just the hairdo.
Yeah.
That was it.
So I actually found a misprint in the Boston Globe, which was, you know, the Boston newspaper out there, and they had round trip tickets for $99. They were supposed to be $199. Back then, I mean, this was expensive for plane tickets, especially for a 19-year-old kid. So I actually called up until almost to midnight, and I called, and they had to honor the misprint. It was supposed to be $199. It was $99. So
that's some persistence.
I got round trip tickets to go. And I flew to California to go watch the Mr. USA. At the time, like, the lineup was, like, crazy. Like, the top five guys were eventually going to be, like, top pros. This guy, Chris Cormier, won the show. But this guy from our area named Paul DeMeo, he passed away now, but he was known as Quadzilla. He had these big legs. So I was really going to see him because he was, like, my idol. And I flew out there, and I got to stay at, like, I trained at Gold's Gym. I remember spent, like 5 hours there just watching all these big names come in. And like, Keanu Reeves trained there at the time.
Really?
Yeah, like, all these people. Tommy
How
Lee Jones was
Keanu
there.
Reeves?
He was a kid then, man. Like, that's, I mean, he was filming Point Break, the original one, and all that back then.
That's nuts.
But I saw, like, all these actors there. I mean, you still see him in and out of there, but, I mean, shoot, Kobe Bryant was training there, like, in times when I was there. Like, he was there. Ron Harper from the Lakers was there.
That's crazy. I like the whole, this happened to me also, where you go from, and this happened to me with Randy Couture. I had a buddy who, you know, passed away also, Lou Russell, and his girlfriend Erica, she was a stripper out here in Vegas, and she's awesome, awesome girl, really, really good-hearted girl. And he had a connection with Randy, who was kind of a hustler, had his little clothing thing, and I somehow ended up sharing a room with Randy Couture when Chuck Liddell fought Tito Ortiz in the Mandalay Bay, and Randy was just like the coolest dude ever. He's like, oh yeah, Lou's buddies, friends of mine. There was like six of us in Randy Couture's room. Like, he had two people on the bed with him, and then there was like Ryan Parsons laying on the floor, and I actually flew my girlfriend in, and she stayed in the room on a cot with me, and it was just like a crazy ordeal. But it just makes you think bigger when this has happened. So I'm like, 2005, I'm sitting here with Randy Couture, the world champ, to watch these other guys, and it just was like, just eye-opening, you know, just like,
being
like,
around
oh, crap.
The greatness.
Yeah, it's just, it makes you think like, oh crap, like, we're all just regular folks.
Oh,
know?
Yeah, it's like, I remember when he opened up Extreme Couture, and I used to go down and watch Phil Baroni, because I was friends with Phil at the time when he was fighting in the UFC, and I used to watch him, and Forrest Griffin was training at the time, and I was like hoping I'd run into Randy, you know, because I was a fan. Like, UFC back then, like, I tried to go to, like,
all you being a young, tough guy, like, had this been the thing when you were younger, it might have been something you went into.
But the fights were few and there was all, weren't every week, like, there now. Yeah, so I was like, I'm in Vegas, and they used to invite me to come, you know, like, when I was building a name, I was like second at the Olympia. And they would, so every fight, they'd be like, you want to come as a guest, you know? So anyway, so like, I got to train in Venice. I got to see all these stars. And I knew right then, I said, shoot, I want to have a career in bodybuilding. I knew it, you know?
And I said, it was right there. It was like the light clicked on. I was like, this is what I'm going to do.
And I said, you know what? And I, you know, to make a long story short, I went back home after that. I was so motivated. I said, I'm in 2 years. I'm going to come back. I'm going to compete in a show in California. So I get the notoriety. I can shoot with the magazines. I can be like right here. So I did that. I came back. Like, I competed at 240. So I went from a teenager at 215 to 240 2 years later, which is, like, unheard of, with quality muscle and ripped. And I won the show easy. Landed my first Muscle and Fitness cover. And I, like, my career was, like, just like, I met Joe Weider, who was like the father of bodybuilding.
Yeah, Weider is the man.
He offered me a contract right there on the spot, so I knew, like, okay, I have an opportunity to make money now. Like, you talked about the money. Dude, it's a struggle. I mean, I don't know how it is, like, with you guys, and when you start making,
it's,
I mean, it's
rough.
It's a broke business. Like, you eat a ton, and you have to finance your training, and you try to work as little as possible. So I was working, like, bullshit jobs, just trying to make ends meet enough to be able to afford my food, gas, and of course I got free gym memberships where I was training out back east. But I'm like, I gotta get out of here. And that's when I made the move. Like, once I started making real money, you know, I got my pro card at 23, so I was able to start now winning prize money. But I actually went to California like 2 years later and moved to Orange County. I was there for 2 years, and then I came to Vegas, and I started getting to other business and whatever once I started really starting to capitalize and buy.
Right. That's like pretty much the exact story of what I went through. I mean, I was literally making $7,000 a year working as a wrestling coach at UC Davis. It was a full-time job, like, for 10 months out of the year. Then I would work wrestling camps in the summer, and then I would fight for $100 or $200 to show, $200 to win. And I was bussing tables, and I was doing this kind of stuff, and, like, when you look back, there wasn't really, like you said, there's two shows a year.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you're eyeing some big opportunity. On top of that, there was no weight class for me. The only weight class was 170 pounds. It was the closest. BJ Penn and Jens Pulver had fought at 155, but they took that out. And so here I am as a kid seeing, like...
How old?
I just graduated college, so I was 23.
Yeah.
But seeing, like, this is what I want to do for a living, but there was zero opportunity, and so then it was like a struggle. Like, what the fuck was I thinking? You have to be a little crazy.
Fights,
you know,
fights for $400.
You know, yeah, I said that because everyone's like, you're never going to make any money in bodybuilding. And you know what the funny thing is like, looking back, I said, I never was like, oh, I'm going to be the best bodybuilder in the world.
Yeah.
I never said that until I landed second for the first time in the Mr. Olympia, which is as far as you can go.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to be the guy that makes money in this business. And everyone said, how are you going to do that? I said, marketing. And
so I love that.
And I wasn't a marketer. I mean, I went to school for, you know, criminal law or whatever. But I just knew, okay, if I have an image, it's an image is everything, right? So if I just, you know, I looked at relationships. Everything's kind of built off relationships. I networked. And, you know, when the internet started, like 2000, I remember I launched my website, jcutler.com, and I was able to start, like, I was selling one 8x10 picture and a t-shirt with, like, my picture doing front lat spread, you know,
yeah,
like a line drawing, and I sold that for, like, $20. But I remember, like, I used to have a mail order, so when I started to become popular, like, I had a little write-up in the magazine, I had a P.O. box in there, so people would send me checks for, like pictures, or I would write hand letters to people. This is before,
yeah,
like, anyone was typing on computers. And I write back to everyone. I'd get jail letters. I'd get everything. And I would take the time to write back to everyone. And then people just started buying stuff. I mean, people wanted to buy my used workout stuff.
Yeah.
And to be honest, like, I would sell them, like, some shirts and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, back then it was just mail orders. So people would send me checks or whatever, money orders. And
yeah. It's crazy how creative you have to be to fund your passion without any guarantees. And then it always becomes something else and more. And that's what you always hear as a little kid. Like, hey, just follow your passion and the money will come. Like, you hear that. You're like, you know, all these things, like, just anything you put your mind to, you can accomplish. All these cliche things, but it really is true. And I like, and this happened to me also. I went through junior high school, and college being a goal-minded person and a hard-working guy, same as you. Worked construction with my pop. You know, you said you poured concrete, Greg, as well. Like, you learned this work ethic. So I was never afraid to work hard, but you said I didn't even think about being a champion until I won second. And for me, it was the same thing. I'd get all these accomplishments, and it'd make me think a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. But when I would write down my goals, I was, like, afraid to be a national champion in wrestling or be a state champion in wrestling. So I never even put it on paper. It was like, hey, I want to be top eight. My first goals were I want to beat everyone on my team as a freshman in college. Then it was like, I want a place in the Pac-10. Then I want to go to the national tournament. And I topped out my college goals with I want to be top eight All-American. And I never even put be a champion. Mm-hmm. And I was funny to hear you say, like, I didn't even think about being a champion until I got this one thing. And then it made me think, boom. And then decide, I'm going to make this work. It's just a decision. A lot of times, just a fucking decision. And that's, you know, being a four-time champion, you know, you see that at the very beginning. But people just have to realize the switch sometimes. It's just a thought process.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, I can tell you stories. Like, I remember I had this beat-up white pickup truck, and I remember, dude, gas was 99 cents back then, okay?
Oh, yeah.
So I remember,
sometimes,
yeah.
I tell her this story all the time. You know, I was driving, like, my dad, you know, he gave me a car, whatever. You know, one of his old cars, it was just a beat-up Ford something. And I would drive back and forth to the gym, but I was scrounging up change in order to put gas in, because back then you could put in $2
yeah.
and you had enough to go
That's
back and forth
I
to the gym.
Too, yeah.
So I would wear, like, at the time I had the huge legs, so I'd wear the tights, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd wear the, I don't know if you might be too young, but they had these stuff, these leg warmer socks that we wear with the
yeah.
high top Atomic shoes,
yeah.
you know?
I
so I wear like
well, women used to wear those for the.
I know,
the,
but I would wear them because it made our calves look bigger, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would go to the.
I gotta pull. Yeah. And we have a chance. I'm gonna pull up some of these fucking. I cannot wait to see some of these pictures. I hope they're out there.
Well,
you
with the. I would wear paint tights. I would steal like my girlfriend's tights at the time and stuff, and I wear those. You know? So just to show up my
just
legs.
To make your package look bigger.
Well, you know, I'd wear a fanny pack. So I would drive to the gym, and I can't tell you how many times I ran out of gas.
Oh, yeah.
And I would run out of gas, and I'd be on the freeway, and it was night, okay? And, you know, we didn't have a ton of traffic. It's not like out here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, what am I going to do? Because we didn't have, remember, no cell phone, nothing. I'm
no
like, I got
to
run.
You had to remember, you had to write down directions.
I got to run to the fucking closest payphone, and I'm in tights. So I would, like, I remember running down the freeway. Okay, like the fucking
you
Hulk.
Must look like a freaking
okay.
nature.
So cars would come, because you could see them on the highway. That's how desolate it was. And I would jump over the guardrail and hide so they wouldn't see me in the tights, you know, and then I'd jump back out. And I can't tell you how many times I did it, but I had this old beat-up pickup truck. It was rusty, and I had this slow leak in the tire that I didn't want to get fixed, and I would just pump it up every day at the gas station. I'd drive to the gym. But I remember at one point, I mean, I would drive 45 minutes to the gym in the morning to go train at the best gym and 45 minutes back. I mean, I was just
yeah.
dedicated. I didn't care.
That's the key.
Well, that's one of the big differences now. I mean, I feel like the three of us have kind of been through our trials to kind of get where we are, and I was actually talking to Forrest Griffin about this at the UFC headquarters a couple hours ago. Like, a lot of the new fighters or the new bodybuilders or whatever, because they can go on Instagram
yeah,
and get sponsors super fast, they've never worked a job. Like,
yeah.
you know, three of us were, you know, pouring concrete or waiting tables or doing whatever it was.
Yeah.
Even Forrest said that. Forrest was like, when I was fighting, you know, he was working a full-time job
yeah.
the entire time, and they... You know, they just have kind of a different mindset, and I feel like that's kind of some of the best wisdom we can pass down.
But you know what? I mean,
you
I think
put in that grind, yeah.
I think, you know, it's you still find the guys though, like
mm-hmm.
you still find the new age guys that have that work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Things are easier and it can happen faster, but I still feel like the people that really make it, they have that same drive. It's just different now. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some luck of the draw, of course, but. Same thing, having to fucking, I used to go through hell, and I thought I was cheating the system, working 19-hour days out with a college education from a good university to not have to get a job and thinking I wasn't working when I was really working 19 hours, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
I'm busting tables and I'm coaching kids
yeah.
and I'm fighting people, I'm wearing gloves and like having the guys, the college wrestlers stay after and let me, you know, work on trying to punch them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you think you're cheating the system because you're following your passion, but like, you know, here you are driving fucking 45 minutes and jogging in tights, which I'm reacting, when we get this video stuff going.
You're going to reenact it.
I'm going to fucking reenact this thing, dude. I'm going to get
yeah.
the pink fucking tights. I'm going to get the socks. I'm going to get the fanny pack over my nuts. And I'm running across the causeway.
You got to do that. That was the dress code back then. You know? I mean, that's what the Bible was for.
We're going to do another one of these. And I'm wearing that outfit when we do it.
we'll bring Jay back for like episode 50.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, that was, but I just couldn't wait to get out of Massachusetts. And I'll tell you, man, like I started winning. Like I won my first pro show like as soon as I moved to California. So I was like, I finished like my pro debut I did like when I was 24. I finished 11th in this show called The Night of Champions, which is now the New York Pro. It's like a pretty prestige show. And the goal was to win 15 grand, you know?
Yeah.
Back then I was like, if I could win 15 grand, man, I'm going to be on top of the world, you know? And I had an endorsement deal at the time. I was paid by Joe Weider, you know, and supplements and stuff. And I didn't do place as well as I wanted to. I came back the next year and I got like, I did the Schwarzenegger Classic, which is the second biggest show. I got fourth there. And I qualified for the Mr. Olympia for the first time. So in 99 was the first year, the year prior they did it at Madison Square Garden. Ronnie Coleman won his first, and then they moved it to Mandalay Bay here.
Yeah,
and
I came to that.
I went and I placed second to last in the show, and I had, really? Was so discouraged, man. And I had just moved to California. I just won a pro show. I just had qualified, so I was happy to be there. But I was so discouraged after. I'm like, shit, should I quit? You know?
Was it because you didn't know like poses and
no,
stuff?
No, it just, or? You know, the guys, the quality was just deeper, and I was so young. I was still only like 25. And I went like, you know, what do I have to do? So I went back to drawing board. I, you know, went to train 6 months later. Won my first pro show, the Night of Champions in New York, which, you know, I had placed 11th 2 years prior. And then went to the Olympia. I placed 8th, which is, I moved up half through the field. And that went on like a European tour because they had European shows at the time. And I placed 2nd to Ronnie Coleman, who was the champion at the time. He had just won his 2nd. And, you know, I knew standing next to him, I'm like, shoot, my physique has the caliber to do it. I just need more detail and a little more size.
That's, I want to go back to that when you're done.
So what happened is basically I sat out all of 2001. I didn't compete early in the season. I did focused on just doing the Olympia because the top 10 qualified from the year prior. So I was 8th. And then I got 2nd to Ronnie Coleman for the first time. And that's when I said, shit, I can do this. I should have won, actually. It was a very controversial year. I was beating him in prejudging, and I lost in the finals, which was, you know, I call it bullshit. And then I failed the diuretic test, which is, you know, they did a drug testing protocol, and they were testing. It was just, it was supposed to be like IOC regulated and all this other stuff. And I fought the test. I ended up beating it and kept my prize money and you know, didn't get banned or anything like that. And then after that, I mean, I never placed 2nd below that until I won.
That's awesome. And the thing I want to go back to, which is important, I tell my guys, you know, I had two different coaches in college. One was a very good coach, and one came from Dan Gable's pedigree under him. And the biggest difference was between the two coaches was the discussions that happened before and after practice. And, you know, talking to these guys and getting them the headset and making them believe that they can and that they will, like truly believe. You can say, you can't fake yourself. Mm-hmm. Truly believe that you can is one thing. But the key that I wanted to point out, which is awesome, and it's a good lesson because people are always saying don't make excuses, but there's good excuses and bad excuses. And your excuse when you stood next to Coleman was, I need to do this, this, and this. That's my excuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then my excuse is fixable. And then, you know, it's the growth mindset. I can do shit.
Yeah, it's not, you know, the judge.
It's not like, it's not even that. It's like not be like, oh, well, he's just better, you know? Like, well, he's got these genetics and he's got, you know, this. It's not things that can't be fixed. It's all things that can be fixed. So I'm always reminding my guys, as long as your excuses are fixable and then you're going to attack them, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's an important lesson. I'm curious because Cody, this is so funny about marketing, etc. I didn't do it on purpose, but, you know, I'm the California kid. But I live in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Santa Barbara where there's surfing. But came over when I was 3 years old and was in Northern California, so there was no surfing, etc. I used to put videos out, you know, at the California kid, people just associate, especially from...
Well, you're the kid from long hair, though.
Yeah, the long hair, the
hair. You're always
loose,
tan, you're always
barefoot. Tan. But yeah. Cody thought when he was coming to California, he was going to be on the beach.
The beach, yeah.
Yeah, I had Northern California that...
Didn't know the difference.
That was, you know, we have our spot up on the coast, so we do some videos of us running by the ocean, and he's like, oh, go out there to California, be on the beach. How was California from what you thought it was going to be to come in there? I know that you had a vision of it, but you actually came into a place where there were movie stars and you were on the beach. Was it the same? Was it the idea the same as what actually manifested?
You know what? When I went to visit... And I stayed in LA and I trained in the Mecca. Like, number one, like, you know, I don't know how much you guys, you know, follow bodybuilding, but you talked about Arnold, like, those guys used to work on the beach, right? You saw the pictures, but the gym was literally, like, it was off the beach.
Right.
You know, they do have Muscle Beach, which is like the outdoor gym, but no one trains there.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like a, just a place that people come and they call it Muscle Beach. So basically, like, so the old, like, it's still there. The building's still there. People actually live in the old Gold's Gym. It's like a brick building, okay? You probably don't even know this, but the new gym, the new Gold's Gym, which is Mecca Bodybuilding, is like a couple blocks back from the beach. So, like, that's where I went and trained and whatever else. And, yeah, you see the movie stars and all this stuff. But I moved to Orange County, like Aliso Viejo, which is near, like, Irvine and, like, Laguna Beach. But I was more inland. So I didn't see any of that stuff. All I saw was, like, just nice weather and not as much traffic.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Every gym closed at 9 at night. It wasn't...
It's like 45 minutes from Santa Monica.
Yeah, so it wasn't like I was moving in because everyone told me, don't move to L.A. It's a bad scene. Like,
yeah.
You don't want to get caught up in the bodybuilding circles. I don't know how it is in the fight game, but, like, you don't want to get too mixed up. It's not like we... I know you guys, like, room everybody and do all... Like, guys, like, you said you stay with people. Like, it wasn't like that. We didn't have that camaraderie,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, the camaraderie wasn't there. I was kind of curious,
like,
about
because,
culture.
And I think, really, like, if you said, well, why don't you think that? I just think there's too much money at stake. Like, guys are fighting to get their money. And they think, like, I think a lot of the perception is, like, well, I'm better than this guy.
Right.
I should make money. And I think, really, that's what it really comes down to. I was always general to everyone. I was like, listen, I would help everyone. And that's why I have such a good, great rapport in the business, because I've always been, like,
outreaching. You get and get.
Because you know why? I never doubted I could be the best at no matter what I do.
You weren't insecure.
Everything I touched was like gold. And because you know why? I had the relationships. I had the patience. I had the mindset. And I did everything at 100%. It wasn't like I was doing things, like, half-assed. And I always was a thinker, so I'd always, like, way out, okay, this could happen worse, this could happen, like, this is a medium type thing, and then it would be like, okay, this is like through the roof, right?
Right.
So I always prepared myself, and if you ever watch, even when I won Olympias and lost, which, you know, I lost a lot and I won a lot, you'll see my reaction was never different.
Right.
Like, you know, you guys, when you
it's
win
the
a fight,
same as me, yeah.
Like, you go, you know, you have your thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, Chuck Liddell would, you know, do his thing, and he'd go, yeah. But,
yeah.
Like, I was just like, and she even, you know, coming into the picture, you know, within the last 2 years, she's like, man, what's up with you? Like, you just won the biggest title in the world. And, like, remember, I was a kid at 12 picking up a bodybuilding book, looking at Mr. Olympia's, and here at 33, I won my first one, which everyone told me I couldn't do it. Ronnie Coleman had won 8 in a row. He was going for record number 9 in a row.
Yeah.
And he was like the unbeatable. He was like the
2006?
Best.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I did it, you know, and my reaction was like, okay, because I knew it could happen. Like,
yeah.
I already weighed all this scenario and I already pictured myself winning so many times. And to be honest, it was a long time coming. I had been second to him 4 times consecutively. And I was tired of losing to the guy, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew that my physique had developed enough and I knew my time was there, and I knew that would be the year. I just knew it, you know, and I prayed every day, and I was, you know, I'm not, like, super, like a whole God person or whatever, but I do, you know, I do pray, and I believe in faith of, like, things to happen and that kind of thing. So I was just,
awesome.
Like, super excited, and but I just, my emotions don't really show that. I'm just a very, I'm a mellow dude, you know?
I think that's an important lesson, too. I mean, you can't force how you feel, but you can have an attitude of, I put in my best effort and be happy with that. I had a year, I actually talk about this in my book, where I won, or I lost, like, 10 matches by 1 point or overtime, and then the next year I won just as many by 1 point or overtime, and I just remember the difference in feeling I got. Was like, it was either ruined my whole week, and sometimes it was out of my control. Bad ref, and this is in wrestling, bad ref call, or something happened, et cetera, et cetera. And then when I would win, I would feel so much, I felt so much better. I'm like, same effort, same intent, same input to what I was trying to do, but like, why such a different reaction? And I was like, all right, screw that. Like, as long as I have the opportunity to train and do what I can, you know, I'm not going to be affected as much by, you know, whether I had won or whether I had lost. Of course, you always want to win, but it's not the defining factor. I still had my girlfriend. I still had my buddies. Like, nothing changed, you know. And when people realize that, I think it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, and you know, like, just to a little background about, like, me. Like, I talked about my dad and my brothers. I kind of despised them because I had to work so much, you know. But little did I know that set me up for the dedication, the commitment, because I think, you know, and I think bodybuilding is one of the hardest things you do because you never have downtime. You know, I don't know how it is with
you. It's a lifestyle, right?
Because you have to eat. You have to, you know, remember, you stop eating, you're going to stop growing. And, you know, bodybuilders after a show, if they stop eating, they shrink down immediately. You know, you have to have.
That's crazy.
So all year, like, once you finish competing, you have to go into your off season and continue to build, continue to train. So that really taught me that dedication. But I can tell you, like, with my career, and I'll still say this on record, I was probably the most dedicated bodybuilder that's ever existed. I did everything perfectly. I timed all my meals. I slept, even though I was paid, okay? Under contract, we can do whatever we want. We could party in Vegas for a week and we still get paid. I would go to bed at 9 at night and I'd be up at 6 in the morning. It was a routine. I worked it like it was my job, and I ate my 7 meals a day. I would eat every 2.5 hours on a clock, and I would prep all my food, and I would weigh everything. And I wouldn't miss, and I would train in the gym, and every day I would leave the gym, I would already be thinking, and I would already go through the workout the next day, exactly what machines I was going to use, what weights I was going to push. And it wasn't about, okay, I want to bench 400 tomorrow, I did 390 last. The bodybuilding is not like that. It's all about, okay, what best benefit am I going to get out of my workouts? Like, how much pump am I going to get in the muscle? How much am I going to fatigue it? Okay, the recovery process, how much am I going to rest? If someone called me and said, hey, we have something, I said, don't. I remember going, getting ready for shows. I wouldn't answer the phone for 16 weeks. The phone would ring. I wasn't a guy, like, even when cell phones existed, I said, okay, I'm going in the gym. I'm going to be off the phone for the next hour and a half. I'm going to train.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't bring the cell phone in with me. There'd be no, I mean, this, we weren't shooting. Back then, we were shooting DVDs. So we'd sell them for like $40, like we do like one a year. Mm-hmm. And we'd market them, and that's, you know, we made a great living off that, especially internationally, because bodybuilding is really big there. So we'd have like I'd have a film guy come in and film my stuff, like training or whatever, for like a week.
Yeah.
And he'd compile it into a DVD and put it together for all the body parts. But I was a fucking machine, man. I knew nothing else.
That's a red.
I had no social, and that's what I tell you. I moved to Vegas. I literally, my friends would have to beg me on Memorial Weekend and New Year's, okay, let loose. And you're going to go into, because you know why?
Yeah.
Memorial Day fell. I would follow Memorial Day up with, I start training for the Olympia because it was in September every year.
Yeah.
So I'd give that 4 months. And then we'd finish the Olympia. I'd tour and do whatever we'd book for appearances, which is still the case. I'm booked like every week, still doing appearances. But, and then, you know, the first of the year, like, okay, the year's over, I'm going to start preparing or whatever. And then there was times I was getting for the Schwarzenegger Classic. I mean, I won that 3 years in a row. So that would actually start like after Thanksgiving. So honestly, like,
so
I was just like,
full on lifestyle.
So when I was competing twice a year, I mean, I was dieting 16 weeks at a time. So that's 32 weeks right there. I was dieting for a competition. I wouldn't leave my house. Like, if you call me for guest calls, if I get calls at the time, I was probably booking a guest appearance for like $5,000 a pop or whatever. I'd say, no, I'm not leaving my house.
That's nuts.
I feel like for me, that was kind of what you were known for, that level of mindset.
I was a machine. I was a robot, you know?
Yeah, and honestly, since we're, you know, a big meal prep company, we make hundreds of thousands of meals every month. That's one of the lines we our customer service uses, talking to customers all the time, when you were like,
you eat for
all
function,
those videos,
pace,
yeah,
right?
I eat for function,
yeah,
like that line. If you haven't trademarked that, I'll pay for you to trademark that,
because
that mindset of like, eating is going to do for me is such a critical thing that most people just never seem to understand. And it was always Jay. We would point people to Jay's videos, even. We'd be like, just watch what Jay does.
That's funny. My experience was not as regimented. It was just obsessive. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have to be as regimented with, like, do this at this time, et cetera, et cetera. It was just like, I was all in. Didn't take a vacation for 7 years. Was there on Thanksgiving. Was there on Christmas. Was, like, you know, just overtrained in retrospect, you know. With more science behind it, I probably would have been better off. But
yeah.
I needed that obsession to get to a level of world champion, and you can't necessarily teach it, but I can spot it. Like, I've got a kid right now, Kaleo Romero, in my gym, and he's an amateur, but I mean, I just got him a gift. I haven't given it to him yet, but it says to Kaleo, the champ, from the people that believe in your vision and your journey, or in your vision and your journey. And I'm about to give it to him. I can spot that obsession like you had of just, this is what I want. It's a thought process and it's obsession. And that's what BJ Penn had to become the first world champion, American world champion in jiu-jitsu. To be honest, I know BJ, he doesn't have like the regimen work ethic because of the work ethic, but he had an obsession with jiu-jitsu, then an obsession with MMA, and a mindset of I want to be the best. So what I could use more of is the actual write this down and do it every day, because we have these big goals, right? The goals that you can't control, to be the world champion or to be the president or to be whatever. But then there's the input stuff that you can mark a list. Boom, did it, check it off, boom, boom, boom. It was like that was your secret.
I wrote down every day what I ate exactly. I would bathroom breaks. I ran to the store for 20 minutes. I had journals, handwritten journals that I wrote every move. So when I could look back every 2 weeks and say, okay, how was my progress? I would evaluate every 2 weeks. And I'd say, okay, I would know, okay, you did too much that week. You were too active on your feet. Because listen, as a bodybuilder, like, you don't want to walk too far.
Yeah.
It's sad to say. Like,
you're going to keep your
Like, you don't want to burn calories. So, like, I'm trying to bulk to 300 pounds in the off season.
It's such the opposite.
Unreal, man. We wouldn't even be able to eat that amount of food.
But the food, I mean, I would eat 5 pounds of meat a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I was eating up to 16 ounces of meat. I would eat 5 pounds of fish a day on a contest diet. I eat 1,000 carbs a day, even on a contest diet. I was a machine. I was 300 pounds.
I was going to say, what is your heaviest that you ever
310.
310, wow.
And I'm 5'9". And I would always compete like between 255 and 275.
I watched you win a year at the Olympia.
You did?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Virgil, I mean, it was before anyone knew who I was. I've got Virgil and Virgil Moorhead. They're like... That's one of my best friends from college, and his dad. They were all into the
I've Mr. heard Olympia the name and before,
and so they would go and watch all the time, and they would bring me along. So I watched the year when you beat Coleman. I don't know how many times did you beat him.
Only twice, because I beat him in 06. He came back in 07. He got fourth.
Okay, I was there one of those years.
Yeah,
which is awesome, because and for me, like, you guys are impressive. The guys that are at the highest level. But there's some funny stuff that goes on in those those Mr. Olympias and those competitions. It is the people watching mecca of the world. I mean, see some
women.
You're judging
people like on what they look like.
Oh no,
it's the scenery. It's just
imagine this. There's the best in the world, and this happens in the fight game also. And then there's the wannabes and the people that are trying to go the prosthetic route, and they're just posers basically for guys like this. Putting the time and energy, and it is hilarious. Implants and overgrowth, and like women that are pretty much men now, and like, I mean, it is the best people watching on the planet.
Well, you go to the, like, you know, I saw you at Europa, and that's like, that's watered down because it's Texas, you know.
Yeah.
Go to like the Olympia Expo, or you've probably been before.
Oh yeah, I've been to all those.
And Arnold Classic Expo. Yeah. I mean, you see all types of people. Not as bad as it used to be, because people have kind of evened off, but back in the day, man, like, people would show up like with their weight belts on.
Yeah.
You know, to walk around.
Oh yeah. They don't do it anymore like that?
I feel like it's mainstream. Mainstream.
It is so... Yeah.
I mean, there's so many. The thing is, if back when I did it, remember when I started, it was women's bodybuilding, men's bodybuilding. That was it.
Yeah.
Now you have like men's physique and classics. So you got more pretty guys in there.
Yeah.
And the women's bikini and stuff like that. So the chicks are actually pretty decently like, put together now. I'm not into muscle girls, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got a beautiful girl right here.
I mean, she likes to work out.
You don't need to look any further.
I don't know. I'm just not. I was never attracted to like...
The strong women.
That shit don't really do much for me, you know?
I was thinking about when there was only a couple events a year, I was thinking about this today, because they have all the booths set up and all these things. And I remember watching Jens Pulver walk through the Mandalay Bay by the sports book, and being like a little envious and like not envious, but like thinking I'm gonna be there someday. Where he walked and everybody went, and then it was like hard for Randy or anybody to get.
Randy
to
was
casinos.
A fucking superstar. Then,
he was
you know?
Superstar.
And Chuck Liddell was
and
like
Chuck Liddell, yeah. And you could they couldn't get around because I like it was like you
can't
were in
walk
the
anywhere,
everybody was there and they like stop and it's not like that anymore. It is a little bit on some big shows. But like it's not like it was when it was a scarcity. Now there's 50 shows a year. There was 2 shows a year for the for
but
the
like a McGregor would have that kind of
McGregor, crowd. Rousey would have that.
Yeah.
Jones at times could get that, but it just kind of
I wonder if Chuck would have it still.
In the right in the
right
we all
environment.
Have it in the
yeah.
right environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a fight where Connor's there and in a big event, yeah. But like this event, probably not as much, you know. But it's kind of crazy to think about that whole, the whole.
Well, I wanted that too, you know. I was looking at, I was like, man, if I could just have a like a spread in the magazine back then, like being on the cover of Muscle and Fitness.
It was like you made it.
Like that was like unheard of. Like you were a star, especially where I came from. I came from a town of 6,000 people. I'm like I'm recognized as like a famous person there. You know, like I go back and everyone's like, oh my god,
oh my god, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But it's just crazy the things that you, and now, like, people send me magazines, I'm on covers, I'm like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, I live in a neighborhood in Sac that's got, like, a good little community. It's called East Sacramento. We just had this little Christmas get-together, and I met one of my new neighbors. And I'm talking to him, his wife's a doctor at the, you know, at the local hospital for... You know, whatever. She's a little bit younger than him. He's a good-looking older guy. You know, like nice physique, like Italian-looking dude. Mm-hmm. You know, just has a swagger about him. And we're talking. And he's like, "Oh yeah, I just moved in here. We've been dating for a long time." And then you know this and that. And I finally get around to like what he did for a living. And he was a male model from 17 to 43. And he was like, he was like, "You got it." We started BSing, like we're BSing, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, "Really, male model?" And he's like, "He's not like a." He was like. The guy who had a physique in his underwear that was on like the only cards and the only calendars they had at the time.
It's Fabio.
It wasn't like the internet where everything is. There's like there's a guy in his underwear and there's like one of them who's on the calendar and on the card. So he would go in at like 17 years old into his school and his teacher had like had a picture of like I got you, you know, in my underwear. You know, you're in your underwear.
Yeah.
And he traveled the world and did all that stuff. And he was like, at that time, he was like, you know, it was scarcity. There's if you were the guy, there's only so much. There's a Hallmark or whatever the big company was, and they had their, you know, one or two cards that were the key cards of the calendar. And it was like now everything's so I don't even know what to watch on TV anymore. You know what I mean? There's so many damn channels and like. You just end up playing on your phone the whole time and like watching.
She watches Housewives. You watch Housewives.
Housewives?
That's what's on at our house.
Well, you lucky guy. This guy out from the sticks, hauling big things of concrete, knocking cows over, beat people up, and having chicks. And now he's got to watch Housewives.
Well,
all
you know,
day?
I'm learning. Actually, we're doing a remodel right now, so we're learning about like what furniture we want and all this from the house.
There you go. There you go. Not too shabby.
Yeah.
Oh, so I was gonna say you brought up Phil Baroni at the time, mm-hmm. the New York City badass.
Yeah.
And we saw him. Did you know we saw him as
you
we pulled up yesterday?
Yeah.
He got out of the taxi and went right in front of us. I'm like, oh, that's Phil Baroni. And I heard.
No, I didn't even see him.
Talking about times changing, and I don't know if this is true. I wanted to stop him and ask him, but I heard that he was paid some years back in Bitcoin in Japan. And he didn't know what to do with it, or whatever. And,
so
and
he
now
still
it's
had
hit.
It and, made a ton.
And now it's hit. So I want to check with him and see if that's true.
Really?
And I'm gonna call and ask. And someone's like, yeah, he got a paid in Bitcoin from.
It wouldn't surprise me because he used to go to Japan a lot. You know, he was there.
Yeah. And so he didn't know what to do with it. He was like, oh, I got paid. Didn't do anything, so it just sat there, and then it ended up producing. So he might be loaded right now. I have to. Give old Baroni.
It's just
talk.
Funny with him because like he always wanted to look great
yes.
when he was fighting. That's like we became friends. He's like, man, he wouldn't be about like, hey, you're conditioned to fight.
Right.
He would always be like, hey, how do I look to to take away the shirt off.
He would ask me too about cutting weight and stuff. I'm like, I think you're doing all right.
But, you know, that's when he was like beating people up. Like he had a couple fights where he like killed a couple guys.
Yeah, like
you know
severely
what I mean?
Damaged their heads.
Like,
by
he had good
them.
Hands back then.
Remember he knocked the dude out? I think I forget the guy's name.
There was some dude with black hair. There was a video, and he just literally was like a speed bag on his
head. He knocked him out, and the guy was knocked out and couldn't fall because he was punching him in the face and keeping him
so
up.
So fast.
Like, and the guy couldn't fall because he's getting held up by getting punched in the face. Yeah, Baroni was the bad. He was a bad dude.
And he was from the East Coast. We have mutual friends, and that's how I ended up. And he moved to Vegas. Like, he came to Vegas, and he's like, hey, you know, I know, like, I don't know many people here or whatever, so... And I was just starting to be, like, a big name in bodybuilding then, you know?
Do you feel like there's, like, a good Vegas community now? Because a lot of people talk about, like, you know...
You know what?
So much come
and go in
Vegas.
Honestly, I think it's kind of come and gone, to be honest. Vegas was, like, becoming, like, the new Mecca because it was affordable for people. And, like, we had the 24-hour gyms and we had a lot of Gold's gyms that were... But everything's become more commercialized now.
What
like,
community in general are you talking about, or Greg, or just the bodybuilding world?
Well, I feel like there's some bodybuilding community
You know
bit,
what? There's a lot of there's more physiques and that kind of stuff now. Mm-hmm. So it's like a younger generation. Like, you know, you're talking to a guy. I'm 44. You know, so I've been out of it 4 years. I haven't competed, and you know, so I kind of I promote an event here at the Palms every year, the Jay Cutler Desert Classic. So I get a lot of amateur people coming and whatever, but. It's not as much bodybuilding, but our bodybuilding numbers are coming way down. No kid at 17, 18 now is saying, I want to be the next Jay Cutler. Of course, they'd love to be that, but they're looking at becoming like the guy, Jeremy Buendia, who's a men's physique guy. He's 24.
Yeah.
Like he's now three-time champ.
Yeah, I feel like it's all
champ,
physique
you know?
Aesthetics.
I was just
focused,
talking to, you know, Scott James.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And I was just talking to him. I told him that you would come on and he said, what's up? And
I almost signed with BSN back in the day. You know?
Yeah, Coleman was
He was their star, and they wanted to sign me in. They were the biggest, you know.
Yeah. So he was saying that, it's changed, and he had a name for the physique guys. I'm not going to say what he said.
Yeah.
But he was like, you know, I'm not really into that, blah, blah. And that's a new kind of craze.
I'm a promoter, so I won't talk bad about any divisions.
Right.
Because, listen, I'm okay with CrossFit. I'm okay with anything that people put physical activity
right.
in. Because in this day and age, it's hard enough for these kids to get off the couch and do anything. You know, they're playing video games or watching TV. So I'm like, anything that benefits your health in a positive way. And I still think bodybuilding is healthy if you do it the right way, correct way.
Yeah, I was going to say it. At 44, I mean, you look great.
I'm still training, but listen, I'm eating half as much. Like, I talked about eating 5 pounds of meat. I'm lucky if I eat a pound and a half a day now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it is bad on your kidneys and all that stuff when you're eating that kind of food. Mm-hmm. It's extreme.
That much meat, yeah.
But listen, as an athlete, you know how it was. You would just push yourself as...
Yeah.
Like, listen, I would just crawl into bed at night, like, and be like, I can't do anything more. I'd pass out in 2 seconds because I was beat down.
Yeah.
But all I wanted to do was win. It didn't matter. I was willing to work harder than anyone else.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like especially with bodybuilding, like the educational piece of understanding, oh, if you do want to lose weight, you got to, you know, be eating chicken
and broccoli.
It's all
the diet.
And you know, controlling your macros and calories. And that's, you know, for me, I obviously lifted weights, you know, clearly nowhere near to the level you did. But,
you sure?
Yeah. I think we can tell.
Yeah, zoom in on him. Let's get a confirmation on that or not. His wife's a doctor back there. What do you think? You think that's accurate?
Oh, don't get rid of it. It's going to make me feel even worse. But the point of the story is, like, that, like, bodybuilding is where I learned all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It was the, you know, the videos and all that really kind of made you understand about...
Didn't you go through, Greg, you were going to be a bodybuilder and you realized, oh, maybe that's not for me. Then it was CrossFit. And like,
I just didn't have the legs for it.
Then you're like, well, I think I'm going to be a businessman.
Yeah.
Make everyone else look
I tried good. CrossFit too, and I was like, I'm probably never making the game. So.
I mean, the diet is so rigid. And like I talked about, like, I could go into depth. I mean, we could talk forever about it. But like, if I had to eat, like, if I had to feel a little fuller, I'd eat a little steak. And then if I wanted to get leaner, I'd eat white fish, and then I would have chicken. Of course, then supplements came in. That's the difference between Arnold's time and our time.
Right.
Like, the advanced equipment, the food, like, they were drinking milk back then for protein, you know? Nowadays, like, we avoid all dairy products.
Yeah.
We don't diet on fruits.
That's crazy.
You know, green vegetables really don't matter. We just eat protein and carbs, like starch, you know?
I got to sit down with you and pick your brain sometime outside of this also and just get, like, I mean, you are an expert and something that's very important to my sport and my guys also. I mean, and you can use that knowledge that you have in any way, shape, or form. You want to lose weight, you want to gain weight, you want to be faster, you want to be, you know, anything. So I love this. And do you have any business stuff that you work on that is geared towards that? Do you have a books?
No, I do. I mean, I do nutritional. Like, I have a team that kind of does like nutritional guidance. I mean, I've written a book. You know, that kind of was like a training manual. I mean, my DVDs, that kind of stuff. But more, it's like I do these seminars still, and I do kind of mentor a couple people. I mean, the kid that came that's winning Mr. Olympia now, he's the champ since I left. He beat me, Phil Heath. I mean, I kind of took him under my wing in the beginning and taught him more the business, how to make money in order to finance his career. And, you know, how to market. Basically, he picked up every endorsement I had, like a piece of it, and, you know, I linked him up. That's what I mean. I was willing to share all that.
Yeah, which is, I'm known for the same thing. It's like a trickle-down effect. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said about the guys that believe in themselves and aren't intimidated of other people. I mean, you want to give back. It's almost an instinctual thing because you want people to have what you had and experience that. And of course, it all comes back to you. You know what I mean? And kindred spirits. You know, like one of the reasons why you and I are buddies is because there's just a common like feel about it. You know what I mean? Like good dudes help each other out, and you're good buddies with Cody, which is awesome. And mm-hmm. And I mean, he thinks the world of you, and it's
we represent
cool.
The shirt.
Yeah, I'm representing the shirt, baby. I would like to see what I look like in Jay's shirt. I would probably look like a kid.
I used to wear 4Xs. I'm down to 2s now.
Oh man, I would love to see myself in a 4X shirt.
Your eyes in the extra medium over there.
I'll make it as a tent. Put it in there, peek my head out. That's awesome. So cool, man. I think. You know, it's awesome to have you on the show. Thanks for making the time for us. I know you're a busy dude and a legend. I mean, it's very rare that you meet somebody that is the literally, like, undoubtedly one of the best in the world and possibly one of the best of all time of something specific. And then on top of that, something as difficult and as regimented as the things you've done. So thanks for having us. We love, you know, getting the minds of the greats. Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, as always, I'm sure he's going to be trying to push some trifecta nutrition on you. Some of the best food on the planet, organic.
Is that what it's a meal service?
We got multiple divisions, but yeah, one runs a meal service.
We'll talk more about that. But hey, folks at home, we can find Jay. What's your Facebook?
Jay Cutler 4X, jaycutler.com, Cutler Nutrition. Cutler Athletics.
Yeah,
he's not a hard guy.
Yeah, I guess Jay Cutler.
He's all over the internet.
Yeah, you got it.
Just make sure it's the right Jay Cutler, not the football player.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you're gonna get that confusion.
Yeah, so we will see me reenacting the scene of Jay running out of gas in his hoopty.
Yeah,
running in tight pink Spandex that he stole from his girlfriend at the time, wearing the '80s. Jazzercise socks with a fanny pack covering my junk with a comb over. So look forward to that. I may take my shirt off even.
I'm just pretty sure you're stacked up under there a little bit. You're still training. I follow your social.
But hey, thanks again, Jay, for having us, man. Yeah, much appreciated, dude. We'll do it again.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap, guys. Tune in next time and you know, be expecting some good stuff. Check this guy out. Go Google him and know who you're dealing with. This guy's the man.